Right. Very good morning to you, all the Eagle FM listeners, wherever you're tuning in from, whether it's through our website or neither the app, which we really appreciate you for choosing us every day. You're choosing us and keeping yourself informed. Thank you so much. And I'm your host, Loisa Shimi. I will be with you until the hour of 7:30, just to give you the usual update on the economic, on the policy update, entrepreneurship. That's what I'm going to give you until the hour of 7:30. But before I do that, please don't forget to rather follow us on our social media platform, Eagle FM MBO, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn, as well as the Village News webpage on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Do not also forget to subscribe to our WhatsApp channel for the daily news update and, of course, the newspaper alerts, and that is Eagle FM Media House. And do not forget to download the app, Eagle FM app, available on Google Play Store and the App Store. Now, to start off internationally, is that the expert says recent cut in donor funding could adversely affect refugee settlement in the region. Now, through various local initiatives such as WFP cash payment and promotion of commercial exchanges, the camps have been doing quite well in difficult circumstances. We might take a lesson.
Northwestern Kenya, where experts say recent cuts in donor funding could adversely affect refugee settlements in the region through various local initiatives. However, with much less financial support coming in from across the world, some of these initiatives are likely to suffer, and with them, the hopes of thousands of refugee families. Here's CGTN's Wokisanyabwa with more.
Commodities move fast at the Tumaini market in the Kalobeye settlement in northwest Kenya. Kalobeye was established to bring together refugees from the densely populated and diverse Kakuma camp, as well as members of the host community. Through a spirit of peaceful coexistence, the settlement has sparked a wave of opportunities for many, so much so that business people are flocking here from across Kenya.
I heard that there were refugees here, so I knew that where there are lots of people, there must be business opportunities.
Across town at the Kakuma refugee camp, another trader spreads his wares, but he has a different business model. Mohammed, a refugee, is one of about 170 traders participating in Bamba Chakula, an initiative through which refugees receive monthly cash transfers from the World Food Programme.
In addition to the food rations they get, refugees also receive monthly cash transfers, which they can use to buy additional household items. This also gives an extra boost to Kakuma's economy.
On a monthly basis, like here in Kakuma, WP is transferring close to around $1.5 million every month to the market here in Kakuma.
The refugees come and identify what they need from a shop, and I deduct the cost from the money paid to them.
However, the future of these initiatives is in jeopardy. Starting June, donor funding cuts mean the 300,000 refugees in Kakuma and Kalobeye will stop receiving cash transfers. This is expected to put a major strain on the local economy, but many say it's already slowing down, and refugees struggling to put food on the table are feeling the impact too.
Right now, when the refugees get a little money, they spend it on the day's meal. Our businesses are also not doing well.
Kenya's government says it's working with local organizations to explore ways to overcome these setbacks and empower both refugee and local communities around Kakuma.
Right, there you have it. Now, to move on to the next item in Somalia, is that efforts are underway to boost women's involvement in Somalia's sea-based industries. Now, a key driver of economic growth, with a vast Indian Ocean coastline, the Horn of Africa country holds immense untapped potential hindered by conflict, climate change, and gender inequality. Now, authorities are emphasizing the critical role of women in unlocking the economic promise of Somalia's maritime sector. We might take a listen.
In February 2023, the federal government of Somalia, with support from the United Nations, launched the Women in the Maritime Sector National Action Plan. The aim was to enhance and empower Somali women in the maritime sector by giving them more opportunities. Then on Sunday, as the world marked International Day for Women in Maritime, officials convened in Mogadishu to take stock of their progress.
To all Somali women in maritime, your leadership, vision and courage are shaping Somalia's future and inspiring the region. You are not just part of the maritime story, you are leading it.
Somalia has the longest coastline in mainland Africa, stretching for more than 3,300 kilometers along the Indian Ocean and the Gulf of Aden, and is widely considered to have enormous economic potential. But years of conflict in the Horn of African country has impeded economic progress. At the same time, it has a significant shortage of marine expertise due to poor educational and institutional capabilities. Meanwhile, it's a sector which is hard to get by without women and girls due to cultural norms. But officials say that is all changing.
The government has made it its mission to develop and to extend support to women in the maritime sector by ensuring they get all the help that they need in terms of technical support to help women in maritime, because it has been recognized that women are the backbone of development in Somalia.
Sunday's gathering also recognized Somali women's contributions with a presentation of the Women in Maritime Awards to 23 individuals and one youth organization. Among the honorees was Salma Abdirizak Mohamud, the founder of Sea Care Somalia, which is an organization dedicated to preserving Somali beaches.
That was really an important moment in my career in founding Sea Care Somalia. It makes me feel happier day by day. And it helps me to continue the impactful work I was doing for my nation, Somalia.
Officials say the initiative has created a space for Somali women to lead and innovate in various male-dominated fields, ensuring...
All right, there you have it. Now, to move on to South Africa, is that the national budget paints a bleak picture of a tough economic environment characterized by global headwinds arising from the trade wars, persistent logistics constraints, heightened political uncertainty and high borrowing costs. Now, the local economy is expected to grow at 1.4% this year, lower than the March forecast of 1.9%, with national treasury assessing risk to the outlook to be elevated. Now, Finance Minister Enoch Godongwana, however, says the economic policy remains focused on supporting the growth, boosting unemployment, and building the economic resilience to shocks. We might take a lesson.
Full start to the year, Godongwana presented a third iteration of the budget amidst the highly uncertain and unpredictable external environment. National Treasury says compared to the budget presented in March, this budget reduces anticipated revenue and spending. Tax revenue projection over the medium term has been revised down by 61.9 billion rand, mainly due to the reversal of the VAT rate increase and the updated economic forecast. To boost revenue collection, there will be an increase to the fuel levy and no inflation adjustment to tax brackets. Government says it's considering major reforms to state spending and budget process, hinting that reviews have identified billions of rands in potential savings from poorly performing programs that can be redirected in future budgets. Government says it has a borrowing requirement of just over 588 billion rands in this financial year. Government debt is higher by 1.2% than earlier projections at 77.4% of GDP in this financial year, the highest since democracy. Debt service costs will take 22 cents of every 1 rand collected in revenue, or 1.2 billion rands every day.
We said in this current fiscal year, debt to GDP will peak, and thereafter we will see a downward trend. Indeed, debt is peaking this financial year, but it's beginning to a downward trend. And the higher number than the 12th of March at the moment is occasioned, mark that point, by the change in the digit in the GDP number, because debt is sensitive to that number. but we're still growing the primary surplus. The deficit is also declining, as we're showing in the numbers. The deficit is also declining.
Experts believe the budget will likely be acceptable to, amongst others, the GNU partners.
The absence of any tax increases, and as a result of that, we're seeing some cuts in expenditure, but not significant. And over the three-year period, National Treasury seems determined to contain the overall increase in expenditure, but of course paying significant attention to boosting tax collections.
Some say government's commitment to fiscal consolidation will likely be acceptable to rating agencies.
The rating agencies initially said that because we have better growth prospects and more political certainty, they were looking at South Africa in a more favorable light. Now, over the last couple of months, we've had a bit more political uncertainty, more global risks coming through, and I'd say that the medium-term growth forecasts have come down a notch. And so on the back of that, I think that rating agencies might actually want to take a bit of a wait-and-see approach in order to see how these fiscal consolidation measures pan out and how the structural reforms can potentially lift growth in the medium term.
Others say the answer to improved growth and job creation lies in continued progress in structural reform implementation, commitment to prudent macroeconomic policy, and declining uncertainties.
The most important is that they remained committed to fiscal consolidation. So the debt GDP ratio still peaks this year and then gradually declines. And they were again very pragmatic in terms of making small adjustments to various revenue item lines and spending item lines. And so I think they've dealt in a very sensible way with the challenges that confronted them.
Government plans to spend just over R1 trillion on infrastructure over the medium term. It says the majority of the funds will be used to expand power generation capacity, upgrade and expand the transport network, and improve sanitation and water services. National Treasury says it's also making it easier for the private sector to invest in infrastructure and setting the right incentives to boost investment in infrastructure. Gloria Tsafakomo, SABC.
Right, there you have it. Now, to move on to Kenya, is that Kenyan President William Ruto has launched the first bunch of new housing units for residents in the capital, Nairobi, now under the country's affordable housing program. Now, while held as a lifeline for informal development dwellers, the project has drawn criticism over its funding model and thus burdened on salaried workers. We might take a lesson.
This batch of completed units under Kenyan President William Ruto's flagship affordable housing program. These ones are just over 1,000. Under the project, a key pillar of the president's bottom-up economic transformation agenda, the president aims to address Kenya's housing shortage, create jobs, and stimulate the local economy.
Today we are opening homes, and it is my utmost pleasure, and as I've said, this is one of the most consequential days in my political career, that today I can hand over keys to citizens of our nation, people who would otherwise have never had a chance at life, that today they have keys not just to open doors, not just to open a house, but to open a home into dignity, into livelihoods that are different, and we are making a difference in the lives of the people of Kenya.
These homes are offered under a rent-to-own model, with monthly payments ranging from $24 to $40 over a 30-year period. But the project has faced harsh criticism from inception due to its funding model that imposed additional taxes to formerly employed workers, essentially appealing to salaried workers.
Let us believe in our country. Let us believe in our capacity to change the destiny of our nation. Let us believe in ourselves that it is doable, that we can transform our nation, that we can change slums into estates, and we can change the destiny of millions of our citizens. Let us believe in Kenya. Let us be patriotic citizens, citizens who believe in their nation, who believe in the well-being of each and every citizen and every one of us.
This allotment benefits residents of Mukuru Kwanjenga, an informal settlement where people have for years lived without basic amenities. The government has such projects across the country in the initiative, expected to significantly transform housing in the country.
Right, there you have it. The time is 17 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock at this early morning scoop. Now, to move on to the next item is that in South Africa, speaking about the significance of Ramaphosa's meeting at Trump, we might take a listen to this particular discussion.
Let's head now straight to the White House, bring in SABC News correspondent Sherwin Bryce Pease, who was in the room during that interaction between President Cyril Ramaphosa and Donald Trump. Sherwin, and you've been out there for the last few minutes now, basically taking the temperature as to what can be achieved post that media interaction.
Well, I will say this, Tembe Kiele, if you want to take the temperature of that moment in the Oval Office, I would describe it as the pot boiling over, right? I think there was a lot of unexpected nuance to how that played out. And so I'm standing outside the White House right now, awaiting President Ramaphosa's departure from the White House. They're having lunch. Their delegations are now conferring. But we are out here trying to digest what just played itself out live on television cameras and TV screens around the world. And to help me do that, an American correspondent with the news organization, the Slice News Urban Radio Report, Mona Orson, is joining me just for a brief conversation. Mona, you know, for the South African contingent, the South African journalists that were here today, this would have been a completely new experience. You've been around these parts a little longer than I have. Tell me what your takeaways are from that interaction we just witnessed.
Sherwin, this White House is a house of many colors. We are not short on explosive conduct here, especially under the Trump administration. Of course, we all know about what happened when Zelensky came, and many people were anticipating a possible similar recurrence. For me today to see this, I absolutely was in shock. And I watched as President Ramaphosa kept his composure despite the surprise element of it all. He is someone who evoked peace through Nelson Mandela. And I thought that that was part of the entire point of coming here and understanding the violence that is surrounding the notions of genocide and actual possible genocide, to have a leader come despite being completely taken aback and keeping his poise in that moment was quite impressive. But like everyone else, perhaps around the world, I was shocked to see it.
Yeah, shocked as well by the moment where, you know, the president said, turn down the lights, or whoever said it, and then playing this video of an opposition leader, you know, chanting, kill the Boer, kill the farmer, and making that sort of a very central moment in this entire conversation. And then, of course, Ramaphosa responding that this was, of course, not government policy. Have you ever seen a moment like that where they sort of come with the files in an effort, I think, to undermine the relationship moving forward?
I have seen something similar. In fact, when Kylie McEnany, it was more a domestically related incident where they brought certain videos to the press room talking about something that was happening in the city of Chicago here in the U.S. So I have seen that before. And this administration very much likes to do what they call providing the receipts. That's a term that you might hear on the internet. They like to bring the receipts. But those receipts, I understand from speaking to your South African representative, that they deserve some context. And here in the U.S., it is unfortunate that we do not get to hear lots of global news and have global perspective on these things. And so on one hand, there is a good takeaway from this in that perhaps people will investigate what's happening in South Africa. My understanding is that 72% of the farmers in South Africa are Afrikaners. And so their perspective wise, that gives a different perspective to the notion of oppression. And so I think it's important that we had this floodgate sort of open today, if you will.
Yeah, I've just dropped the line, guys, so if you can call me back, I'm going to continue talking to Mona here. We connected basically on the language that came out of that conversation in terms of the equivalence you heard from President Trump to apartheid South Africa when, you know, the black majority was undermined by the white minority nationalist government, and making an equivalence to sort of a reversal of apartheid in light of what they believe to be the Afrikaner problem of genocide in South Africa. I was very curious to hear your takeaway. Maybe share it with our viewers as well.
Here in the United States, we like to refer to this as sort of righting the wrongs of the past. We have a sordid history of slavery, and currently there's some denialism that's happening through historic revisionism, where we are not able to get books in schools that address the painful past of Americans. I see that there is a parallel here with South Africa not fully addressing the painful past of apartheid. I will never forget it as an American, because on my 19th birthday, February 11th, 1990, I was a journalism student, and that is the day that Nelson Mandela was freed. And so that was very significant to African Americans here in this country, and it's something that we still reflect on when we talk about global freedom and equality. So that is a big takeaway for me as it relates to how we see things here in America. Not stifling the truth is key in this moment.
Mona Austin, thanks so much for joining us. I really appreciate your time. Mona Austin is with The Slice News. The White House correspondent spends a lot more time in the surrounds of the Oval Office in the press briefing room. She also covers the Senate side of the United States Congress. Just always important, Tembekile and Bongiwe, to get a different perspective here. But of course, just the equivalence of, you know, comparing apartheid South Africa with what is happening in terms of current day South Africa, the white Afrikaner situation that is being elevated and amplified by this White House. They're still in that lunch meeting now, doing their tete-a-tete. You've got Park Stau, John Steenhuisen, Kombuzo Ncabeni, the president himself, President Ramaphosa, in the room, and Ronald Lamola of International Relations. We saw Elon Musk in the room as well. Mm-hmm. One wonders if he's also sitting around that lunch table now, right now. But, of course, no cameras, no fly-on-the-wall scenario. But certainly later we expect the president of South Africa to hold a press conference at his hotel with the South African media that have traveled here, including ourselves. And so still a lot more to come in what already feels like a day populated with a lot of narrative, a lot of information and a lot of divergent views. The question is, how does this relationship move forward from this moment? Some Tembekile might even say, how does it recover?
All right, there you have it. The time is 25 minutes in the office o'clock, and this is early morning skip. Now, moving on to Zambia, is that the President Hakainde Hichilema has urged people in the country to be responsible and focus on their studies. Now, President Hichilema says education is critical ingredient to be advancement for society, and that everything is anchored on it. Now, he says human advantages from health and agriculture to manufacturing is anchored on education. We might take a lesson.
Began. President Hakainde Hichilema returned to his former school, Kalomo Secondary School, where he studied from 1976 to 1980, to make a donation. During his visit, President Hichilema donated mattresses for all learners, 200 bags of millimeal, 5 kettle, and several boxes of cooking oil.
Thank you.
School exams. The president encouraged the learners to take advantage of government business loans and grants to create wealth and employment through entrepreneurship.
If you don't go to university, it's not because you are not talented. You are talented in other areas. What your government is doing now is to bring out the talents of all the students in their differences. Hence the skills training. So that the plumber, one who has a flair for plumbing, can advance in plumbing, in carpentry, in anything else. That's what your government is doing. Holistic approach to education.
President Hichilema said his government is resolved to improving the education sector and ensuring that every learner has access to quality learning opportunities.
education for all, education that does not segregate. That's why we brought free education. When we were in opposition, we talked about our policies, including free education. Those who were in government then said, HH is telling lies. Where would he find the money to fund education? I said, leave me alone. I know where the money is. Leave me alone. Where was the money? Where did we get the money to fund free education, CDF, 36.1 million from Kwacha per constituents per year? Where did we get the money to fund bursaries? Where did we get the money to fund skills training? Because we recognize not everybody can go to university.
Southern Province Minister Credo Nanjua said all schools in the province have received their operational grants.
We want to inform you that all the schools in the province have received their grants, totaling to 58.5 million kwacha. Mr. President, you're coming here today. It shows great leadership, and it inspires many of us, especially us who have served under your hand, that we should always remember where we come from.
Kalomo Member of Parliament Harry Kamboni noted that communities are now actively involved in development planning through the Constituency Development Fund, CDF, empowering grassroots participation in national development.
We came up with a vision of WDCs in the village. It is the people in the world that decide their development. It's not me. People ask me, people sit in the villages, in each ward, and tell us what they need. And that's what development should be. And that has been done religiously and very well. For that, Mr. President, we thank you very much.
Kalomo Secondary School head teacher, Mambo Mwemba, praised President Ijilema for inspiring the school to venture into agricultural activities.
The school has successfully rolled out the new curriculum and has embarked on production unit as per your directive, with 7 animals, 20 goats, 42 pigs, 280 beds, and a visible vegetable garden to improve the nutrition of learners.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low because I donated blood.
Call NHP on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
Omudiha, utekirwa kaguna, imadina om.
The time is 30 minutes in the of 6 o'clock. This early morning scoop. Now, lastly, on the international segment, is that the Transparency International has launched the rallying efforts to accelerate a program project to fight alleged financial flows and reduce economic inequality in Africa. Now, with an estimated $88.6 billion loss annually, the initiative focuses on regional advocacy and improving access to public resources for marginalized groups. We might take a lesson.
Rallying efforts to accelerate progress project. This move aims to address economic inequalities in Africa by tackling illicit financial flows. It will also power relations and imbalances at the intersection of income and wealth disparities and gender and social status. Transparency International says it is seeking to combat illicit financial flows in Africa through regional advocacy and the strengthening of social accountability. It is also pushing for greater access to public resources for vulnerable and marginalized groups. Let's now discuss this further with Robert Mwanyumba, Africa Regional Coordinator of Transparency International. He joins us via Zoom from Nairobi. Thank you very much, Mr. Munyumba, for joining us. Now, Transparency International has launched the Rallying Efforts to Accelerate Progress project. What motivated this initiative and what does it aim to achieve?
Well, thank you very much, Penina, for having me on the show. One thing that motivated us is that we noticed that there were mechanisms that facilitate illicit financial flows on the African continent. And we will, and what these do is they essentially enhance inequality and hinder development. What we wanted to do is make sure that we come up with strategies and programs that disrupt this illicit financial flows through making sure that we have stronger regional and global action that would curb illicit financial flows, tax evasion, tax avoidance, especially those that continue to undermine sustainable development in African countries.
Right. So let's talk about this illicit financial flows. Can you elaborate on how these flows contribute to economic disparities and what specific actions should be taken to address this situation?
Absolutely. I mean, more often than not, people think about illicit financial flows as an abstract concept. But let me give you a number. Illicit financial flows contribute to the loss of about $89 billion from the African continent annually. This is way more money than we receive in official development assistance. Now, illicit financial flows happen as a result of commercial transactions, criminal enterprise.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new...
So this is Early Morning Scoop. That is your way. It's dedicated to you to give you the economic news update, the trade update, and the, of course, entrepreneurship until the hour 7:30. And please do not forget to rather... follow us on our social media platform, Eagle FM Namibia, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn, as well as the Villa News page on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Do not also forget to subscribe to our WhatsApp channel for the daily news update, of course, and of course, the newspaper alert. Do not also forget to download our app, that is Eagle FM app. You find that on your Google Play Store and, of course, the App Store, and so that you can, at least wherever you go, you can be informed. Yeah, to start off locally is that the updates on the second day of the YAP induction hosted by the UNPFPA, Esther Shifotoka, a logistic and supply chain consultant, pointed out the strategic importance of the initiative in advancing the sustainable development goals in the country. And on this, of course, Michael Petrus has spoke with Esther Shifotoka to find out more about how the YAP members are being prepared to be change makers, equipped to translate global inspiration into the local action. We might take a listen to this particular update.
Yeah, sure. So my name is Esther Shifotoka, and I'm the Logistics and Supply Chain Consultant for United Nations Population Fund, that is UNFPA in short.
Today, you spoke about the connection between the Sustainable Development Goals and the Youth Advisory Panel. Can you expand more on how the YAP members will help advance the SDGs, particularly those focused on the youth?
Okay. So the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals are 17 in total, and they are contributing towards sustainable development, touching on all aspects pretty much of touching on all aspects of life, if I should put it. Mm. So the 17 Sustainable Development Goals, UNFPA then contributes to some. However, okay, directly contributes to some, but indirectly or secondary contributes to all. The main goals that UNFPA contributes towards to is goal 3, which is to promote sexual and reproductive health and rights. It's basically on health. However, that's the one UNFPA contributes towards. Mm-hmm. And it has a big aspect on youth as it is of reproductive health. And most of the youth or adolescent and young people are of reproductive age. Mm-hmm. So this is the one goal that it contributes to. And then we have goal 5, which is drives gender equality and fights against gender-based violence. Again, this is something that the youth continually faces, or some of the challenges that they face. So it also directly contributes to the work of what the youth advisory panel will be doing. Should they understand these sustainable goals, they will be in a position to make very, very informed decisions, or even well thought of decisions, or even advice, as we put it, to UNFPA, that will directly impact our work greatly and also aid in accelerating the work of or the aim of the Sustainable Development Goals. We also look at Goal 10, which is to reduce inequality through youth empowerment. Very important. We say Namibia is a very youthful population, 71.5%, yeah. I think. Yeah. So, well, this is according to the statistics. I shouldn't say, mm-hmm. I mean, according to census, I shouldn't say, maybe. So if you're to look at that, that then means that Namibia has a very strong workforce, because mm-hmm. it is young people. Mm-hmm. So then we need to tackle this sustainable goal to reduce inequalities and through youth empowerment mm-hmm. to actually, yes. Then the next one is goal 17, which is build partnerships with government and the youth. Very mm-hmm. important. So we wish to partner with the youth to ensure that everything that we try to implement, or everything that we try to contribute towards sustainable development, is in partnership with the youth.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. So those are some of the main goals. Then you also have education, where they really play a role in advocacy. Right. Yes.
Okay. My second question would be, in what ways does the UNFPA's mandate, particularly on issues like productive health, gender equality, and the elimination of harmful practices, stand? And by that I mean, how would you track the progress of the panelists in achieving the SDGs going forward?
Okay, so when the youth advisory panel, or the members, when they do work that contributes towards the development goals, the SDGs that UNFPA directly contributes to, usually for every activity there would be a report. And this report would form part of the progress assessment that's usually carried out yearly. With the latest progress assessment carried out in 2024, that then gave us the revelation more at the international level, but all of it is really just taken from the data that is produced when the work is done, which feeds into the main reports, which then feeds into, or then forms part of the progress assessment, which then would be carried out and give us a more clear statistics or even data.
Okay, thank you so much for speaking to me.
All right, there you have it. Just small takeaways there is that Chief Otoka stated that investing in the establishing of YAP is not just a platform for youth participation, but also a direct investment in achieving priority global aspiration. So she also referenced a number of SDGs, particularly on sexual and reproductive health rights, gender equality, adding gender, and more. Now, to move on to that still conversation I had in relation to the UNFPA or YAP indexation, my colleague Nyiro Nanye, Michael Petrus, spoke with Haiju Bay about how this inclusion of youth voices bridges the division between the grassroots realities and the national development agendas. We might take a listen to this discussion.
Hello, my name is Hanju Bay. I work for UNFPA Namibia as an ASRH and Gender Integration Associate, as the host introduced. I'm from South Korea and I've been here for 10 months now. Mm-hmm. So I've been working on those areas for for quite some time, I'd say.
Okay, that's great. For my first question, I would like to ask you, what was the key motivation behind establishing the Youth Advisory Panel? And how does it align with the UNFPA's broader goals in Namibia?
So, as you know, Namibia is a very youthful population. Over 71% of the population is youth. And I think for UNFPA in Namibia, the key challenge identified was the limited structured engagement platforms for young people to influence decision-making at the national level. So the Youth Advisory Panel addresses this gap by making sure that youth voices are heard within UNFPA's programming and advocacy efforts.
Okay, great. Was there a specific gap or challenge that prompted this intervention?
Not really necessarily any specific incident, I would say. But overall, we are an organization for youth as well. But it's very important to have that youth voices heard in the programming. So yeah, that's why we established this panel.
That's great. Okay. So youth engagements, you know, youth engagements are often at risk of becoming symbolic. What steps is the UNFPA taking to ensure the contributions of these panelists lead to tangible policy influence and community impact?
So UNFPA and Namibia are committed to make the youth voices heard in shaping policies and programs. So this might sound really broad and not really specific. So YAP members, the Youth Advisory Panel members, will be engaged in national events and workshops. Their insights and their recommendations will be included in the advocacy materials and policy briefs. So they can make recommendations on priorities or for UNFPA program. So they can also, we can also collaborate on reviews of progress on key UN conferences and national reviews. So I think these are some of the things that are already established in roles and responsibilities in YAP members.
Okay. So regarding the panelists.
Yeah.
Will the members of the Youth Advisory Panel be part of the actual consultations with governments or UN agencies?
It's hard to say for now if they will actually be physically there, but we will actually make sure that their recommendations are heard in UN conferences and national reviews. I can say that much for now. But let me just add some things more. So we support capacity strengthening, capacity building for the members. So that they can actually contribute meaningfully and confidently in such forums. So they will actually go to forums and conferences to present their views. So even this workshop is taking place to equip them with that ability, I would say.
That's so, so, so great. Thank you so much for speaking to me, Hanju.
No worries.
All right, there you had it. Now, just to take out the Youth Advisory Panel, according to Bay, fit into the UNFPA's broader strategy to position young people as active agents in developing policies that affect their lives. Now, she also said the program aligns with the leadership of young people in areas of priority, such as sexual and reproductive health and gender equality, and of course addresses the extent to which the panelists will have an influence on national processes and, of course, including government consultations and policy making. Now, again, Michael Petrus also interviewed one of the newly selected panelists, Myrna Tameron, who spoke about her inspiration to be on the panel. We might take a listen to this particular update.
Okay, so today we're seated with one of the selected youth panelists. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes. Hello, everyone. My name is Myrna Tamer, and I will be representing the Comas region.
Okay, great. Okay, so for my first question, I would like to ask, what motivated you to apply for the Youth Advisory Panel, and what do you hope to contribute during your time?
Well, what motivated me first and foremost is the fact that I get to serve for the youth. I'm still a youth, and I love serving. So when I saw that, I said, okay, how best can I also contribute to the best, what's the right word I would like to use? How best can I serve people that need help? I applied and I said, okay, if I apply, that means I get to be a part of the decision makers. Or in a way, I get to influence in some way, even if it's a little dent of influence.
Right.
Yes, okay. That's the main reason.
Okay, with the panel focusing on issues like gender-based violence and reproductive health, what specific challenges do you see in your region, and how do you plan to address them?
There's a lot of gender-based violence happening in Commerce region, and a lot of also mental health situations or problems happening in the region. It would be best if we can collaborate with decision makers, stakeholders like the Minister of Health, Ministry of Education, Ministry of Gender. We engage with them, we see what way we could work together and create a amicable solution for the community, for the youth, for the people affected.
Right.
Yes.
Okay, so for my last question, how do you think young people can hold decision makers accountable and ensure their voices are not only heard, but acted upon at national level?
Ask the right questions.
Right.
Ask questions that will prompt the people to give you an answer that you're looking for, not for the aesthetic of asking a question. Because I've been in rooms where people ask silly questions. I mean, I always say there isn't a stupid question, but there's certain questions that won't give you the answers that you're looking for. Ask for precise questions that would give you a precise answer. Ask people, okay, if you've done A, how has A resulted in B?
Right.
Or is B actually the result that you wanted? Ask necessary questions. Create awareness through social media. Through social media, you can go on your Instagram account and say, I was hoping that the Ministry of A, B, and C was going to do A, B, and C. Have they done it? And you hope and wish someone who works with that ministry sees it. And then hopefully they give you the response you need. Yes.
Thank you so much for speaking to me.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, the time is 49 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock, and this early morning scoop. Now, hearing to Tamaron, she said that, or she just rather explained that under the YAP, she has the resources and, of course, the platform to make a real change, saying it's not all about hearing, it's about creating solutions that impact our lives. Now, to move on to the next item is that the NedBank contributed $560,000 Namibian dollars to support 20 students to study agricultural technical skills and crop farming, animal handling, and business insights. Now, the handover was in partnership with Agra Limited, Agronomic Board of Namibia, and NedBank. Now, there was also a presence of the Minister of Agriculture and Fishery and Land Reform, NG Samweni, who commented on the importance of partnership in promotion food security in the country. Now, my colleague David Chombe spoke to the manager of, the spokesperson of the NedBank, so Mark Kaulinga, to just unpack this for us. We might take a listen.
Yes, we are continuing with Early Morning Scoop. We are looking at economic development in the effort to support agricultural production. It was indicated that yesterday NedBank, Agra Limited, and also Agronomic Board sponsored around 20 students to study at Agriculture Academy. However, for us to unpack this, I got into the conversation with Selma Kaulinge, the communication and PR manager at NedBank, just to give us a short brief of what have happened, what the importance of this one, the sponsorship, and how are things going to unfold, particularly regarding the tuition fee of the students and also the way forward after they graduate from this academy. Ms. Selma, good morning and welcome to Early Morning Scoop.
Good morning. How are you? Good morning to you and your listeners. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate this opportunity.
Yes, we are very happy to have you. So maybe just give us a short brief of what have happened regarding the handover of, the sponsorship of 20 students who are going to study in this academy. And what is the relevance of this event and the production of this event to Namibian economy?
Okay, so I think what we witnessed yesterday was the coming together really of the private sector as well as the civil service in the form of the Agronomic Board of Namibia, coming together to really make a change in the agricultural industry of Namibia. So what we saw was Nedbank giving $560,000 towards the tuition of students, 20 students who are going to further their studies in agriculture, which we also learned that agriculture really is the backbone of any economy. It feeds the nation. And so this is really what we witnessed yesterday, was really just the handing over of these funds, official launch, and the handing over of these funds to Agra.
Now, how are these students going to study, and how is this academy operating where they're going to study?
So the academy is run by Agra's Provision. Provision is a leg of Agra. Obviously, Agra is a known player in the agricultural industry for many, many years. So Nedbank is giving this money to so students can further their studies in agriculture. So it will cover their tuition fees. It will cover online courses. It will cover registration fees. So it really equips these students to really go into their education, knowing that they don't have to worry about, you know, where the funds are going, and they can really go into the course just knowing that all they have to do is really just study and work hard and further their studies. I think we learned that the students will learn both animal agriculture as well as crop agriculture. So both those are very important in the development, obviously, of the industry, agricultural industry.
No, how are these students selected, or for how long Nedbank have been operating or have been supporting the student in this academy?
Okay, so this is our first year supporting this initiative. I think we have had a relationship with Agra in the past, and Provision. We've contributed to short courses as well as courses in the informal settlement on how people can really use agriculture to better their lives. But this is the first time that we've done this initiative. But I think it will not be the last time that we...
Yeah, let's talk about post-education, because we have seen a lot of students.
I think there are several opportunities. The course also has a business and a business element, so they will learn how to run their businesses. So you can be self-sufficient farmer. You can contribute to other to the industry. That is our wish, that the students come out of this course and they really contribute to the agricultural and the overall national economic situation.
Yes, Ms. Emma, just the last question. A partnership. A lot of speakers were talking about partnership. Yeah, from Nedbank, what is the importance of working together with private sector and also the government to address the issue of food security?
I think it's, today was a great example of partnership. We had the Honorable Inga Zamwandi, Minister of Agriculture, Fisheries, Water and Land Reform, officially launched the program for us. And I think it just speaks to how Namibia as a nation needs to move forward. And I think our MD said it perfectly, that we have to walk in the same direction. Because sometimes you find corporates going one direction, government going in one direction. But I think if we come together and we have a shared destination and a shared vision, I think we can go faster and we can go further. So I think it's really important that the public sector doesn't just wait on government to do initiatives like this. And government obviously can look to the private sector to just take their hand and move forward.
Yes, thank you very much, Ms. Salma Kaulinge. Thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me. I wish you a good day ahead.
All right.
So, all right, there you have it. Now on the next item is the Faith Foundation officially launched its exhibition fight between Harry Simon and, of course, the powerless ninja Shimwe Fereni yesterday. So now the founder, Dennis Tobias, stated that the foundation's mission focuses on the prevention, rehabilitation, and in general, just fighting crime. So now he stated that for ex-convict to be accepted back into the society, there must be an emphasis on education and, of course, social as acceptance. Now we might take a listen to what he has to say more on this.
The chairperson and the founder of the Faith Foundation. So it was said, the foundation to trust welfare organization under the National Welfare Board. Our aim really, as we are here today, it's basically to pass on the message. For that reason, because we have few pilot projects that we have been trying to execute in the past few years ago, but it was more of a theoretical approach. But now, where we are very practical. We are the soldiers on the ground to fight against crime and poverty. So, under our mandate in our constitution as a faith foundation, we have few partnership agreements with relevant stakeholders, which are like the Ministry of Health, Scabbing, the Ministry of Safety and Security, the Ministry of Gender, the Ministry of Youth, and the Ministry of Education. Those are our pillars that we work hand in hand with. But most of all, to just start with even with the Ministry of Safety and Security, we have an understanding where we are reviewing our MOU now based on examples like we go into detention centers, like our Indian tribes, that we go into these detention centers because, mind you will find scenarios of more like crimes and different merits of how crimes are happening in our country. Not to for me say you will find, for instance, the someone that has committed robbery, for instance, for example, someone that has committed rape, someone that has committed stock theft, all these scenarios of crimes, and these people are always detained in one cell or holding cell, if you put it in that way. So we are trying to find the merit of these people that us and the government should work hand in hand, hands together, to find an amicable solution, to speak louder than only not these people to be only detained always, because there are always other factors like psychological problems that we are not really following up. Because there are also those that are under the influence of substance abuses that commits this kind of crimes, unaware of such acts. So it's not always a solution to detain these people and keeping them together. You are creating a culture that is giving birth to an anarchy that we are not really going to more have a helping hand in future if we let it happen. So that's why we came in with the Ministry of Safety, as I'm saying. That is just with the Department of NAMPO. What we have been doing already lately, it's now in the life of even Ninja, as an ex-convict, as you know, that he has been away of us.
This Africa Day, ShopRite is bringing you the lowest prices to celebrate. Save with great deals on all your local favorites and more, like 2-liter Pepsi, Mirinda, Mountain Dew or 7-Up soft drinks. 3 for only 35 Namibian dollars. And 4 kg Real Good Chicken IQF mixed portions for just 178 Namibian dollars 99. Celebrate Africa Day with these massive savings. Valid till 25 May 2025. Only at ShopRite. Lower prices you can trust. Always.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm
looking in his head right now, gray hair. As young as I am, I think he went to prison when he was at my age of certain crimes that he's committed. But now he's trying to come back in the community, be accepted, and then we must accept him, and then we are executing this pilot project with him. Amicably, because we need to find a solution, because he should also be a tool to fight crime. So that is just basically the same that he is also there. With the life of this man, also Eddie Simon, affiliated to the foundation, he speaks more louder to the fact that, you know, he still remains an undefeated champ, even though he has put us as a country on that calendar, on the world basis. So he will still be a world undefeated champ, so he should speak definitely on the boy child's life and the upbringing of what should be the role that he also went through. And you also know that he was also taken among us the time that he also caused that accident that was also regarded as a crime. So he was also sentenced. So that is just basically an approach that we are just trying to get very strategically on how to get stakeholders on board to hear the message and to hear them out for them to be accepted, because they speak louder in terms of what they've already implemented in our country. So it's just more of an acceptance that we are more advocating for. It's more an approach of an advocacy, right? So that is just basically the Ministry of Safety and Security there, where we are trying to have these centers, like the link that was now available to us, though it's not really officially going back to the groundbreaking officially, that should be now, that now the link belongs to the Faith Foundation. We are trying more of raising awareness even with this fight to establish a dead center, basically in Oshakati, which would be a safe housing and rehabilitation center. So we deal more with now the substance abusers, and you know that the crime that have been happening in Oshana, especially in Oshakati region, is more based on substance abusers, more young boys that are using more of drugs, so to say. But there is a statistics that given the understanding that we have with the Ministry of State and Security, that they are feeding us with such crimes. So hence the reason is to establish a center in Oshakati. Not any other center that was ever established in Oshana region. Now we know there's regulations to be followed in terms of now the decision of establishment of safe houses and rehabilitation centers.
All right, the time is 3 minutes in the of 7 o'clock. Now to move on to the next item on this same subject is Ashima Thereni, who spent over 26 years in prison, emphasized that the purpose of the event is to also raise the awareness. We might take a listen to this particular discussion.
Yeah, the importance of this foundation is I was approached by Mr. Dennis when I was released from prison. Okay. When he saw me first, my appearance on Runga Radio. So then he saw that maybe I'm the person that he need to join his foundation so that the message can come from the correctional facility through me, who was involved in crime in the past and I've been released as a rehabilitated offender. So we are trying to give a message to our youth in the country that crime does not pay. So we want our youth to be free, uncommitted crime youth that we have, our next generation. We don't want them to involve in crime because crime does not pay. So for that reason, we decided to have a rematch, me and Harry Simon, which was supposed to be there. Because the last match, things did not end nice. And so many of the fans were disappointed, especially mine. So I've been in training since January up to today, and I'm in a perfect and good condition. And technically, I'm wise now. Last time, I just went in the ring because of, a man that trusts his body to who can stand and take punch from Harry Simon. But this time, we are dancing the same music.
But while you are there, Mr. Ninja, what lesson did you learn from the last or from the past match?
I learned that for me, as you all know from my beginning of my release from prison, when I appear in Olunga Radio, I told the people that I used to train kickbox. I thought that would help me to stand against Harry Simon. Then I realized after the fact that, no, I need to train like him, like a boxer.
Okay.
So I end up having three boxers that have prepared me nice from 6 January. While people are traveling from the north to go to Windhoek and Windhoek going to the north, I was busy in the trainings, and my coach, they also see the improvement of my technical. Now I'm a boxer like Harry. As everybody know in the country that when you approach such an activity and you use social media, is when the messenger is everybody. We decide to go in the rings because many people, they watch rings, boxers. So we are using box to spread the message to the youth in the country so that they can know that crime does not pay. We don't want our youth to fall in footsteps like mine in the past. We want them to be free youth from crimes.
Right, and there you had it from Ninja there. So now, again, moving on, my colleague David Chambe engaged in a conversation with Solomon Ipinge. That is one of the stakeholders in the organized boxing event featuring Ninja and Harry Simon. So the MTD campaign against crime. Now, Ipinge discussed the significance of the sports economy and emphasized how Namibia should focus on its development while encouraging youth participation in sporting activities. We might take a listen to their discussion.
Yes, we are continuing with Early Morning Scoop. We are looking at economic development, particularly in terms of sport economy. It was indicated that yesterday at Ngwendiva, there was a launch of the upcoming boxing between Mr. Nija and Harry Simon. However, one of the attendees and one of the stakeholders is Namibia Chambers of Commerce and Industry. And today I got into the conversation with Mr. Solomon Ipinge, who is an economist and also one of the stakeholders or one of the individuals who were there, just to unpack with us the importance of this event and also the contribution of sport to the Namibian. Good morning, Mr. Solomon Ipinge, and welcome to Early Morning Scoop.
A very good morning to you, David. Happy Thursday. Thank you for having me on your program, Morning Scoop.
Yes, let us look at just brief about the event which happened yesterday, and maybe just also to a little bit of unpacking the importance of events like this to the Namibian economy and also to personal development of individuals in general.
Thank you very much, and thank you for this opportunity. Well, we have attended the session with an institution called Faith Foundation, which is an institution that is responsible with the mission of eradicating poverty and reducing crime rates in the country. I do believe that the significance of sport in our society plays a major role in our society. We are kind of intertwined with sports. Sports is a form of unity, which brings us unity as a nation. Yeah. It is also a platform to grow our economy, in that it enables to place us in the map at an international level, but also in general the well-being of the individual as well. And plus, it also contributes to the career level of an individual as well. So I feel it's very, very important for us to promote sports in our society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we understand that this is one of the special events. What is the relevance of this event, again, to reduction of crime and also to encourage young people to participate or to come and take part in Namibian sport activities?
I think it's a very phenomenal approach that they have chosen boxing sports as the one to commence with and organize it. And I actually commend the team to organize that in the northern region of the country. We have had a lot of complaints that, you know, a lot of such significant, important events usually happen in the south. Mm-hmm. This time they brought it in the north. And the fact that the two contestants, who is Harry Simon, whom we regard as the champion and a world-class champion, who comes from our country, who comes from our neighborhood, who is our brother, and then we also look at Ninja. We may all know his history, where he comes from. He was a combat for more than 20 years, and he is now fully rehabilitated, and he has taken on that kind of a sport to improve his lifestyle. And as we can see, his lifestyle is improved. And usually boxing is one of the favorite sports that Namibia in general as a nation like, but also the sport that has taken it to another level. And so I do believe that this event is going to bring a huge impact into society, into our people, into our youth particularly, mm-hmm. To encourage them to stay away from the streets, stay away from using drugs, and pursue a career that can really, really bring about a change of life in a person's life.
Yes, Mr. Solomon, let us look at government investment in sport. We were very happy to realize that the budget allocation indicated that 200 million is going to be invested in upgrading different sports stadiums to category 2, and also 50 million going to be spent on upgrading Namibian leagues in different regions. The question is that how should Namibian, who are trusted with these funds, make sure that this money is practically implemented to make sure that they advance sports facility in Namibia, not to go the other way around?
An assurance to that effect is something that one cannot confirm and allege to, but my encouragement, however, and advice is that it is an extraordinary initiative that the government has considered sport.
Yeah.
And like we come from saying, we are saying that sport has a direct impact in our economy. It attracts tourism. It get us to get known outside the country there. So it is very crucially important that the people in the office who are entrusted to utilize this fund or to facilitate this allocation, I urge them to please act responsibly, that we are able to fulfill and do the work of which the purpose of which the funds was purposefully designed for. For those who are given the work to actually do the actual work in the field that needs improvement, let us do the work and complete the job. So let us avoid at all costs having to leave projects in the middle and incompleted. And in every sector of where the funds are allocated, I do plea and I do urge with these individuals that act with the mindful that this is to improve our nation, this is to improve our youth, this is to improve our economy, and let us act responsibly with what we are entrusted with. This is my advice to the individual entrusted to facilitate this fund.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Salomo Ipinge. Thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much for having me, and thank you to your listeners. Have a wonderful day ahead.
Yes, you too. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, there you had it. The time is 14 minutes in the hour, 7 o'clock, and this early morning scoop. We can go into a very short commercial break, then once we return, we'll take you through on the next item.
Omutiha utekirwa kaguna imatina omjo. Chikao shafasa na nana longeshifa ya eshiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao ota ingongotisa mwene. Anangeshifa ya Namibia ombito ombwa na wa oronjika. Seitha nina omayakuro nirandithomwa yoe yongeshifa yoe okupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uka kombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimwepo yomo programa detu. Moambo, dengira selma, konara heta tuimu. Datu ndatu, heari hamano tano, oniyaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build?
All right, it's 16 minutes in the hour, 7 o'clock, and this is a live read. This May, it's time to celebrate excellence, achievement, and the future. Now, the International University of Management will proudly host its 2025 Winter Convocation Ceremony, taking place over two exciting days. That is Thursday today, 22nd, and Friday tomorrow, the 23rd May, 2025, at the elegant Window Country Club Resort. And now with two graduation sessions each day, we are honoring the hard work and dedication of our incredible graduates. Now, can't make it in person? No problem. Join us from anywhere. All four sessions will be live streamed on the IOM Facebook page. Now, Thursday, which is today, 22 May 2025, graduation ceremony will be live on Eagle FM from 8 a.m. That is about 45 minutes from now on. And join us to celebrate the future of Namibia, because at IOM, we are advancing knowledge and training leaders. Now, save the dates and tune in.
Omutiha utekirwa kaguna imatina omjo. Shikawa shafata na nana longe shifa ya eshiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao ota ingongoti samwene. Anange shifa ya Namibia ombito ombwa na wa oronjika. Seitha nina omayaguro nirandipomwa yoe yonge shifa yoe okupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimwepo yomo programa detu. Moambo, dengera selma, konara hita tuimu. Datu ndatu, heari hamano tano, oniyaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear or favor.
All right, welcome back. And the time is 18 minutes in the after 7 o'clock. And this is Early Morning Scoop. Now, to move on to the last update of the day is the Namibia. Namibia is experiencing a bumper harvest in this season. And local markets are now stocked with a variety of products, including beans, maize, and so on. Now, in light of this, Benedicta Simon engaged in a conversation with one of the farmers, Johannes Haufiku, to discuss how Namibia farmers can store and preserve the agricultural products to ensure their sustainability over an extended period. We might take a listen.
So, as you are continue proceeding with our early morning scoop, so today we are going to look at food storage. So Namibians are now faced with a good harvest after good rain. So local markets are full of products such as beans, groundnuts, etc. So it is therefore important to look at how Namibian farmers can store and preserve their food products and sustain them for a long period of time. So today we are going to engage with one of the farmers, Johannes Haufiku. So good morning, Johannes Haufiku, and welcome to Early Morning Scoop.
Okay, yeah, thank you very much, and good morning to all viewers. Yeah, particularly for Early Morning School, as you mentioned. Yeah.
Okay, so Haufiku, so today we are going to talk about how farmers can store and preserve their food products, especially, you know, that this year we really received too much rainfall, and I know most of the farmers or most people really, I know they did, they really put efforts on their hard working, like to do whatever they can just for them to get what they need to harvest for this year, especially when we are talking about products such as beans and groundnuts and other many more things. So how can agricultural products need to be sold for future usage and sales, if we may to speak?
Okay, yeah, thank you very much once again. And this is a very important question, and to the farmers in Namibia, particularly where I'm speaking to in Kavango West. Yeah, this year we received a good rain,
mm-hmm.
that result in a good harvest.
Mm-hmm.
But even though there is also a challenge of insects that are destroying pesticides and others, and also birds. Yeah, some crop field, the bird and insect have been destroying their product. But anyhow, we can focus on preserving. How can we store our food for future usage and sales? we can only focus on preserving their quality and ensure longevity through proper storage practices. That way, because when we get like even groundnuts, beans, and also mahangu and maize, we can even store in the storage where we can, if maybe we sold the, we can sell it now, we can sell it. If we cannot, then you can keep it where you see the food product are about to be few in the country. Mm-hmm. Then it's also the time you're going to sell it, as long as you can keep them in a proper storage.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. So my other question is, this year, as we are expecting, most of farmers are going to harvest, or they're going to harvest whatever they really worked on for this year when it comes to products, especially what we have recently mentioned, especially maize and mahangu, or maybe groundnuts and beans. So what is the mistake, or what are the mistakes that farmers make, especially this, what are the mistakes that sustainable farmers do when they sow their food?
Okay, farmers use various methods to store food, depend on their type of food and desire shelf life.
Mm-hmm.
This method include refrigerations, freezing, canning, drying, and vacuum packing. Those are the methods that we're going to use. If we see, like pumpkins, we can even store them in a refrigerator, in a refrigerator where it's just cool. And also we can do canning, like beans and groundnuts.
Mm-hmm.
That one, the one we used to buy in the shop.
Mm-hmm.
This is the one, if we can use that method, or we can use this traditional way, the one we are drying, then we can, first we crush, after we're done crushing, the cob, we remove the cob, then from there we can store, drying, like we are drying it. Then
mm-hmm.
from there we can, we can put them in a packaging. I'm referring whether we can put in packets. Where we can even put for 2 kg, 3 kg, like that.
Mm-hmm.
We can, so that the insect cannot go inside.
Yeah. Okay, that means also to save, or maybe to store the seeds for next year or for the upcoming years.
Yes, there is even for vacuum packaging, you can even do if you store for future use, like you can eat, because they cannot get rotten.
Mm-hmm.
And the insect cannot be accessed. Those are the key things that we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So, okay. So, how can food surplus be used effectively?
Namibia can effectively utilize food
mm-hmm.
surplus by focusing on value addition. This is a key one, because you see, like tomatoes now, we are not processing, put them in the canning, so that you can buy it in ShopRite, you can pay in other shops, local shops. If we can put them like value addition, promoting local consumptions, so that we can motivate local to local consumption, so that they can buy and eat. We must eat what we are producing.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot eat something that is produce somewhere else, but we need to mobilize the nation to eat what we are producing. And also exporting, we can also do exporting, desire shelf life, you remove the cob, then from there, the grain, you can export it, even South Africa, Zambia, Botswana, anywhere, where, because sometimes, if we are having a good storage facilities.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In addition, also a surplus product, we can add value addition, can involve processing perishable goods to be extended shelf life the one I'm saying, when you done removing the waste product, like the gray, like the white maize and the groundnut, when we remove the shells, they are referring to the cob. I don't know. Yeah, those ones, when we remove the inside one, the nuts, we can store them. And also example, such as a milling processing plant that we are actually under having in Kapipi, in Kavango West. And also you see like a fresh herb that we are having, other one in Rundu, Okongo, Ngwediwa, Venduk, and Otavi, if I'm not mistaken, that one. We need also to add a food processing in on that fresh herb, so that we can produce like gaming and others. Those are the things that they need. And also to do preservations, like we are, pumpkins, we can cut them, then we perish less. Then by feature, you can use it, and it can sound the same, the same taste, like when it was fresh.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So, okay, how Fiku, as you are expecting most of farmers to harvest their products for this year, what do you think, or do you think most of farmers are going to harvest, or they're going to have a better harvest for this year?
Yes, I can say maybe 60 to 75% they will have.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay, maybe what convince can you give to your fellow Namibians or to your fellow farmers on how to store their foods?
Yeah, as I was saying that earlier, yeah, my just comment is that we need to have a good storage. If maybe you have harvested a lot of bags for beans and the groundnuts, mahangu and maize. Yeah, you need to, because currently now, the ministry through the Minister of Agriculture Extension and Extension Rural Services, they are busy registering to register the farmers who can sell their produce, products, agricultural products such as mahangu and maize. And also, we cannot just waste them like by exchanging with something that maybe you wear, like you can exchange with relish, you can exchange with clothes or blanket. In that way, we are reducing our produce. By the end, if we did not see how long can we, this food that we have can sustain us. And also we need to do seed selections. Seed selection can be also used for future harvest. Maybe the next season, maybe the rain cannot be fine. These seeds which we are having now, we can even keep for a duration of 2 years. Then we can keep, use it even 2026, 2027 rain season. As long as it's made, because we are having a problem of climate change.
Mm-hmm.
Namibia, mostly where we are growing, the growing regions of Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
All right, there you had it. The time is 30 minutes in the hour of 7 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Thank you so much for tuning in today's edition, and I wish you luck and to listen to the next programs. That is Unpacking the Day by the Demaic Osho. Very, thank you so much, and enjoy the rest of your day.